Welcome to The Mountain Life. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Addiction comes in many forms: alcohol, drugs, gambling, shopping, even overworking. And too often, recovery only treats the surface. Our next guest is changing that. Dr. Susie Wyatt is the founder of Sovania, a holistic recovery organization helping people break free from addiction through a neuroscience-based, compassion-driven approach that integrates mind, body, and spirit.
She's a leader in treating what she calls the mental health trifecta: addiction, trauma, and psychiatric challenges, and the creator of Reclaim and Restore, a discrete program designed for high-achieving professionals. She's also the author of an upcoming book called Growing Up Angry, which explores how unresolved anger quietly stalls our emotional growth and how we heal once we understand its roots. Dr. Susie Wyatt, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're so happy to have you. Let's hear a little bit about the basics of Sovania. What does Sovania mean?
Yep, Sovania. Thank you so much for asking, because that term I think is really important for people to understand how rooted we are in the work that we do here. So the term Sovania means be mindful, and that is from Old Italian. And one of my colleagues had recommended that name to me when I was looking for something that would signify rootedness in the classics, and then also communicate what our work is here. So Sovania Vos is a term that's referenced in a poem by T.S. Eliot called Ash Wednesday. And that whole poem describes going into the depths of our pain so that we can emerge and really be transformed. And that's really the heart of what we do here at Sovania.
What a beautiful concept. And so many people around the whole world are suffering from addiction, whether themselves or as a member of their family or someone they care about. What kind of person is Sovania designed for? Because there are all kinds of clinics that can work with specific demographics.
Yeah, you know, that's very true. So Sovania, to answer your question really directly, Sovania, I opened this up really to target, or I should say, to really help professionals. And I started on that path because in my small private practice as an individual, I started noticing that there was such serious addiction issues amongst my colleagues, amongst other professionals in other areas, and amongst entrepreneurs. And they really needed a very high level of care, but they were functioning in a state that was probably not healthy and definitely put people at risk. And so that's one of the legs of the folks that we treat. And then the other leg are people who really want a more in-depth, holistic, more sophisticated approach to not just have a Band-Aid, but really get to the core issues so we can really get to true healing. And I feel like I was put on this earth so I could get people off of medications. And I can't always do that, but I really want to minimize that. So we have those two prongs.
So you, I hope I can remember this wording. You said really high level treatment is what is needed. But, you know, when it comes to addiction, we've got, I think, what people traditionally think of as addiction, which usually has to do with substances. And then we also have these things that, you know, typically if you do them in a normal sort of moderate form, they're very healthy things like working hard, exercise. But how do you know when something crosses that line?
Yep. I love that question. I come to this work through, you know, 25 years of addiction treatment. And I've done a lot of psychotherapy training, and that gets really blended into that primary objective here. I started my career in community addiction while I was also on faculty at the University of Utah running day treatment programs. And what I learned from the community addiction treatment is that addiction is not an adult disease. This is an adolescent or a childhood disease. And so looking at addiction through that lens, what I have determined, I guess you could say, is my definition of addiction, is it's an avoidance of self. We are avoiding this connection between our heart and our mind. And that will drive behavior into places that the wheels fall off. And so if we look at addiction through that model, it's not just heroin, cocaine, alcohol, pornography. This really expands then into that very unconscious pattern of behavior. And that can include, for sure, things like workaholism. We are avoiding what we need to resolve here, so we have a healthy, balanced life and still be very, very productive. And that's the, especially among working professionals, that oftentimes is not a conscious process. I call it the lie to self, or that self-untruth, that if I don't force all of this, I'm not going to achieve, I'm not going to be productive. And then that gets really deep into the neurobiology from there.
Well, that's so interesting. And if you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're speaking with Dr. Susie Wyatt. She's the founder of Sovania. And Susie, I'm wondering if people self-identify when they come to you, because a lot of us may have these addictions going on and we don't actually realize that we're engaging in some avoidance behavior and that we have a disconnect between heart and mind. Have most people come to you knowing that they have some issue, or do they come to you for, you know, just some regular therapy and then it's determined there's addiction?
You know, great question again. I would say we have a number of different funnels for the reasons why people seek us. It could be that they maybe have bipolar disorder and they need tune up on medications, or someone who's going through a horrific event or divorce, or has heavy laden burden from that they're aware of, but they've never resolved. And then there are some people who are here because of their spouse, and their spouse says, if you don't get help, and you have no awareness, but if you don't get help, then our marriage is going to fail. So there are a lot of different reasons why people come here. And it's something that I really, really love about my whole team, and we have a multidisciplinary team here, is that we want to get into that nitty gritty so we can get to a place of full resolution. And I kind of joke that we have the anti-business model here. We put a lot of investment of our time up front. So we see our patients pretty frequently up front, and then they start getting better, so we see them less and less. And sometimes they graduate.
Well, that's the goal, right? I mean,
yes.
I think we all know people who struggled and struggled and struggled and continue to find themselves relapsing or back in a rehab environment to their own frustration. And
yes,
what a wonderful thing to treat them and find that you can send them on their way. You work with precepts called the mental health trifecta. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So that mental health trifecta, and if people want to go to the website, they'll see the Venn diagram. It's Sovania, Sovegna.com. And on that front page, you'll see that landing page, you'll see the mental health trifecta about midway down. And as I was preparing actually for some lectures on neurobiology of trauma and resilience, I really started thinking about, all right, what are the main components here? And what it really boils down to is a neurobiological balance between two systems. And within those two systems, we get this convergence of mental health issues or psychiatric issues. And then we have trauma or distress. And then we also have that addiction or the avoidance of self. And without treating those three things simultaneously, we're not going to get the neurobiological balance that has to be in place in order to fix addiction.
I see. Many people are familiar with 12-step programs, which sometimes they're really helpful and sometimes they're not effective for people. Mm-hmm. How is your approach different, or does it incorporate the 12-step programs?
Oh, it definitely incorporates the 12-step. And 12-step is community support, and it doesn't have to be 12-step. There are other modalities like Dharma recovery, smart recovery. So I look at that community support as building that network and reconditioning the mind and sometimes the heart of how do I do life without this addiction or this avoidance strategy? And learning the ropes from other people who have been successful with that. It's like a mentorship program, and to a certain extent. So Sylvania definitely doesn't replace that. It really enhances the outcomes because we're getting into that connection here, and of that heart and mind, and we're also working towards metabolic balance too. And so we are looking at treatment versus that community support.
Okay. I'm wondering, Susie, what actually is happening neurobiologically in our brains when we have addiction? And how does that relate to, this kind of myth that addiction is a failure of willpower?
Yeah, I love that question. We are not talking about like a moral issue. We are talking about chemistry that has been thwarted for one reason or another. And what I mean by that is we can have an addictive response pretty immediately, whether, unfortunately these days that a kid picks up some pornography that upregulates that the dopamine system to such an extent. And so that's through the reward pathway. And within the reward pathway, there's a super powerful reinforcement mechanism. It's called the ventral tegmental area. And that just like pours out tons of dopamine to reinforce a behavior pattern. Now, from a balanced perspective, we want that when we are hungry and we have to search for food. We have to know where that food source is, where's that water source, so we get that powerful reinforcement. And or we have a really great conversation with someone, we're like, oh, I want to repeat that kind of interaction with that person. So that's how the reward pathway element should work. And then when we get exposed to something that's really like intensifying that, that pathway starts to shift that neurobiological balance. Now, on the other side, and when I'm lecturing about this, I talk about the teeter-totter between these two systems. The other system, it's not in literature, it's my term that I call the regulation pathway. The regulation pathway has to do with our emotional engine, the limbic system, and it also connects to the rest of our physiology, whether we're talking about our brain or our body. And when we have emotional balance with the reward pathway, we have great survival. We have great neurobiological balance. We feel calm, and our body will take care of us. When we have emotional dysregulation, such as going back to early childhood, things that are unresolved, we have dysregulation now of that system, and that causes this teeter-totter imbalance in the reward pathway. So I look at it as almost like a priming of that system when we have that emotional dysregulation. So the objective of our work here is we have to address both of these systems simultaneously and also deal with the physical health too.
So interesting. As you were talking, it was making me think of, we all know these people in our lives who talk about their childhood trauma, and they use it as a crutch for why they're this, that, or the other way at age 55, And there are those of us who say, yeah, we all had traumas of some sort as children, and you got to just kind of move past it. But can you move past that sort of thing that seems to be affecting your life today, without getting some sort of treatment?
Without getting some sort of treatment, I think that's pretty difficult. And are there some modalities that can be really helpful to maybe dampen some of those responses? Yes. Just an FYI, through the 12-step program, there's Emotions Anonymous. So it's that, again, that community support approach to helping people really become more conscious about what are the things that they need to resolve to. But I would say, by and large, if someone has had some pretty serious trauma, it's really difficult to get to full resolution about that without targeted and really well-trained expertise. And I agree with you that I definitely see my fair share of clients who come in who will say something like that, oh, it's behind me. I don't have to deal with that. That was so many years ago. But then when we look for the nuggets, and my job as a behaviorist is to look for the noise, look for what is not congruent with what they're saying and what does that look like behaviorally. And when we look at those little pulses, we'll start to see, oh, you were talking and using the same language about X, Y, and Z from your childhood. I just wonder, is there something there? And that can really start to unlock, and very predictably, especially with really great expertise, and we have fantastic therapists here who know how to drill into that. With expertise like that, we get to rewrite that script, not about what happened to us, but the script about how do I deal with the emotional content now? And that's how we get to that resolution.
Wow. Let's shift gears a little bit. Recent wisdom describes addiction as a disease. Yet I've read some interesting articles about another way to look at it is a learning disability, that it's the cause and effect and the dopamine and the way that the brain is working is just not typical, or it's not in a way that is effective for the person who's experiencing addiction. You work with these five pillars of self-regulation. Can they help, whether it is a disease or a kind of a learning issue or whatever it is, whatever the basis of your addiction, can you talk about these five pillars and how they might affect those things?
Yes, absolutely. So setting that groundwork, the five pillars ties into the teeter-totter. And the teeter-totter in that regulation pathway I had mentioned about the emotional engine, the limbic system, that is attached to, if you will, to the stress hormone system called the HPA. I won't go into all the scientific jargon about that, but the stress hormone system is the HPA. In order to start pulling off the layers, if you will, of the emotional dysregulation that happens with addiction, and that's predictable because of that teeter-totter, there are things that we can do that are controllable by us, and that word control is really important. And those are choices. We're making more and more conscious our choices. So the five pillars all have to do with conscious actions. And those five pillars, I'll rattle those off really quickly here. I just call my the SNRPs. That's sleep, nutrition. Oh my gosh, I'm mixing this all up. Emotional regulation, relaxation, and then productivity. When we are making conscious choices, like I'm going to regulate my sleep cycle, I may need help because I'm having a lot of dysregulation around that. I may need some medication or some supplement help. But we're making a conscious choice to turn off the screen, to go to bed in a reasonable time, to not overwork because my brain needs that rest. And the same with all those other four pillars. When we are slowly dismantling the dysfunctional behavior, we are helping that emotional regulation system or that HPA, the stress hormone system, to be more calm. And when we are affecting that, then we can really start to, we're building like a bit of a foundation here, where then we can really start digging into the core therapeutic issues because we are now building a bit more resilience. And I really want to emphasize, we can't do any of this work successfully and with longevity for long-term recovery until we have a foundation of safety and trust. If we don't have that, if we don't trust our team, our therapists, our psychiatrists, our friends, our family, if we don't have that, ain't nothing gonna change. It's all going to be on shifting sand.
You work with professionals specifically, or target professionals. How is working with a professional, high-achieving individual different from working with a whole swath of people who are experiencing addiction issues?
I would say, people are people. So, and biology is biology. So that those are all more of the predictive things that we can expect. However, When we look at the construct, at the cognitive and personality constructs of high achieving professionals, those are folks who can push and push and push and push themselves for achievement at the expense, putting blinders on, of everything else that is falling apart and they can't see that it's falling apart. When I was just had my own little shingle after I left the university, and I started seeing these professionals with all the background addiction work that I had, I'm like, oh my gosh, they need that higher level of care. And we don't have that in our community. And what I mean by higher level care, I'm talking about like a residential level. So these are people who might be so dysfunctional that they qualify for residential, but they continue to function in their jobs. Usually families are falling apart at this point, marriages are falling apart, but it's the achieve, achieve, achieve. And that in and of itself is an addiction. We're avoiding that understanding of the age-old messages, I'm not good enough, is typically at that core. Or someone will find out that I'm not who I am behind this facade. Those are simply really powerful cognitive distortions that simply, quote unquote, have to get resolved.
We're coming to the end of our conversation today, but because you have such a unique direction for professionals, a lot of professionals, I imagine, are quite good at hiding their issue or couching it in effectiveness and productivity in the rest of their lives. How could someone who is professional and who hasn't reached a rock bottom but would like to avoid that, how could they self-evaluate to know if a program like Sylvania is appropriate for them?
I would say a litmus test for me is how authentically are you engaging with other people? How authentically are you engaging with yourself? When we are knowing ourselves, we have this deep connection. We're not afraid of our emotions. We can stand in who we are, regardless of what is transpiring. We have a backbone to voice our perspective in a really kind and loving way. And we're not afraid of facing that potential rejection. Not that any of us want to have rejection, but we feel connected enough to ourselves that we feel grounded and can just be who we are. Stand in who we are is how I like to say it.
One last question. Do you think that the current preponderance of addiction in our culture has something to do with an intolerance for discomfort?
Yes, and that drives that disconnection. And when we drill down all of that neurobiological balance, tolerating discomfort helps us to build resilience. It helps us to build emotional resilience. It has to be a balance. Being traumatized, that's not balance. But having disappointment, learning how to tolerate that, learning how to build from there, that is so critical for the development of our neurobiological balance. And sifting through all of that, my basic tenet is when we have something that we need to do, or we have a choice in front of us, it's so critical that we look in what I call the emotional basket, like what am I feeling? Or what are those automatic thoughts? Feelings and automatic thoughts we can't control. We can only respond to them. And from that response, that's how we build resilience. And we have to ask, what are my needs in this moment versus what are my wants? If we're living in our needs, we are living in that neurobiological balance. If we're living in our wants, chances are we're not living in neurobiological balance. You know, and just driving home that point, I've yet for anyone to ever convince me that they need heroin or that they need to work excessive hours. We may need to do that here and there to get a project done, but we don't need to do that excessively. But no one will ever convince me for those things because I know that that drives imbalance. My needs will be aligned with my health. And I look at who the heck doesn't want their health. So that's a very powerful way to start driving and shaping behavior.
We've been talking with Dr. Susie Wyatt, whose facility, Sylvania Health, is taking a new and holistic approach to addiction. We're so delighted to speak with you today and hopeful for all the people who are reaching out for help.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure, and I wish you all the best with the amazing reach that you have.
Thank you so much.